five could be the situation of a drunk driver careening off the road into a group of school children or something. There would be, it results in injury to more than one victim due to criminal negligence. There could be as many convictions as there are victims, but only one sentence imposed.
Let me ask the OCDLA representative to come up, please. And Peter, would you like to come up also? Some of us, those of us who were working on that property tax committee, were gone when we had the presentation of these amendments initially. Maybe we could just take a moment to go over those and hear also the DA response. Would you like to go ahead?
Sure. My name is Dave Groom. I'm representing the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. As I explained at the hearing, what we attempted to do with our proposed alternative was to present the codification of existing law. Subsection 2 is the basic law, and the rest of them are exceptions. My feeling when I spoke to the committee before was that Garcia was perhaps the case that generated the most antagonism toward the area of merger. We went ahead, and as Representative Smith pointed out, subsection 4 is a codification of Garcia. The Linthwaite, I don't want to get into Linthwaite too much because I know the committee hasn't had a chance to read it, but in my reading of it, they do support the Garcia, well, Lent wrote both of the decisions, so he supported his Garcia decision. His basic thrust, as I read it, is that if the legislature has not acted in an area, and for example, in the sodomy statutes, which was Garcia, or the attempted use of a knife or a weapon in the Linthwaite area, then they were going to lean toward the side of lenity, I believe was the word used. If the committee is determined to do away with the Garcia decision, which our organization is neutral on that, and I personally have problems with the Garcia decision, I think what ought to be done is to redefine the sodomy statute to include three different types of sodomy, and that would then fit the Garcia situation under our subsection 3. Subsection 5 is the situation where a person who does commit a single reckless act causes injury to more than one victim, and that is again a codification of existing case law. The difficult area, I think, acknowledging that ourselves, is with subsection 6. I think before the committee does anything with our subsection 6, they ought to read Linthwaite, because they discuss the area of criminal episode as defined in the double jeopardy statutes. What we attempted to do with subsection 6 is take it away from the double jeopardy area, because double jeopardy is a constitutional doctrine, and we were attempting to deal with the area where robbery is one of the continuous series of crimes. Robbery is not a 163 crime, and we did not want to leave the feeling that we were attempting to merge robbery into say kidnapping or the 163 crimes, that robbery ought to remain a separate crime, so it would not merge, and that is the reason for the slightly different language in subsection 6 from 131.505. The one thing that Linthwaite did lead us to a question was that perhaps we should have included under subsection 2 all the felonies in chapter 163 rather than all the crimes in 163, because under our bill, Linthwaite would lead to the anomalous situation where a person, all the felonies against the person would merge and all of the misdemeanors would be separate and could be consecutively sentenced. In Linthwaite, he was convicted of menacing, 4 counts of that and 4 counts of attempted use of a dangerous weapon. Well, the felony is not included in 163. So the problem there would be, under our bill, all of them would merge, and yet menacing is in 163, so those would all be separate. And I don't know what to say about that.
But Judy, I want to take your comments a moment. What I think I'm going to suggest, in light of the issuance of the new opinion, is that we send the bill as we finish it today, hopefully, back to legislative council without
our having made any final decision in this area, simply let legislative council carry forward the present provisions of the working draft, not as any reflection of a committee decision, and that between now and the time the bill is set for final work session, we'll see if we can't convene on a more informal basis and talk through the implications of the new decision and see if we can't refine the issue slightly more for the committees to address at the last meeting. Judy, do you have anything you want to add at this point?
Not at that kind of meeting, so
I think this is a kind of inefficient way to get at the issue, and I think we need to look at the opinion and just spend more time, and I believe we can efficiently do right now. Peter, did you have any more at this point?
No, I'll wait.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
Let's hold the Gary amendments also for purposes of that further discussion in the committee meeting. The next issue is the community service minimum maximums, which are presently in section 15. At our last work session, we had agreed that we would delete any statutory reference to minimums. We would accept the enhanced maximums that are in the bill. Then I believe Linda raised a question about whether any prior action of the committee dealing with community service might be inconsistent with that in terms of any of the bill we've reported out, and I'm going to have her check that.
Mr. Chair, I think my confusion was that, in fact, the bill that we had amended and put into this bill, there is this same section addressed in the items that we're considering as to DUII, community service, in another bill.
I don't recall if we, I think we did formally adopt that change earlier, but I'm going to again restate. The chair moves in section 13 to strike any statutory reference to minimums and adopt the proposed maximum, increased maximums. Is there any objection? Okay. The next issue is presented by the next section, which it's 14 and 15 in combination, which is to create the effect of a civil action judgment for judgments that would, under these amendments, include compensatory fines, costs as provided by 161665, and restitution to the victim. And if there's no proposed amendments, we'll simply take that as agreed as part of the bill. Is there any objection to that section? Okay. The next issue is the deletion in 16 sub 1. It's the deletion of the present law that references obtaining information from the district attorney, sheriff, or district agency. We had reviewed the Court of Appeals case that has apparently come down. I believe we were agreed, apart from what we were yet going to do, dealing with information flowing from sentencing judges, findings, whatever, that we would strike the reference to district attorneys, sheriff, and rest of the agency to get at that problem. Is there any objection to that? Okay, now, apart from that issue, we have the issue of the findings to and other information to be made by the sentencing judges. I'd like to just set that issue aside for a few minutes because I think we can clear up the rest of the issues fairly straightforwardly and then come back and spend all the time we have remaining discussing that very knotty problem. So that'll take us past section 16. 17, and it'll take us up to the next issues, which deal with probation and parole revocation. That starts at section 20, page 15.
Bob, do you want to come back up on this one? Linda, could you review where, can you recall what, I don't remember what point we reached in our discussions of these sections previously, if we did. Or if we didn't get to them, could you summarize any concerns that have been raised about the sections that are now stand?
Mr. Chair, I don't think there was any motion by the committee on those sections that the issues that had been raised was the 15-day time period for both probation and parole. The parole part of that, I think, is back in section... I think the issue that had been raised is who was going to be able to conduct what hearings within what time period, and as I remember, Mr. Watson and Ms. Hayes had been able, they said to, or thought they were going to be able to arrange for parole and probation officers to serve as referees to hear the revocation cases. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, I think Section 20 had to do with our calling to the committee's attention that there was a time limit on during which parolees could be held, but somehow or another the time limit on probationers had been deleted in some earlier action. And it caused some question to be raised about the duration of the warrant that the division issued. So we just ask that you reinstate the 15 days for probationers. I think there was some testimony from Cy Kornbrough saying he wanted longer, but I think it ought to be uniform. 15 days is reasonable for one. It ought to be for both. 15 days was a prior statutory limit on detaining probationers, and it's still our recommendation to leave it at 15 days. With regard to the other references to 15 days, that's we, for parolees, we have been working on that arrangement with the parole board and are training our staff and working with the parole board's hearings officer to make those hearings within the 15-day time limit, so that part of the bill is acceptable to us also.
Section 25?
Yes, I think that's where it is. Yes. Line 11 on page 22.
20, is that 24?
Yeah, 25 starts on page 22.
Does the division, Bob, have any questions with respect now to the language in sections 20 through 25?
No, we do not.
Make sure I understand correctly is whether the effect we have set a time limit within which the actual hearing on the issue of revocation is to occur. Is that 25?
25.
That is the revocation hearing itself being referred to.
Just
that the revocation hearing?
25. I believe so.
Linda?
Well, that's parole revocation, right?
Yes.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay. Can I ask for some clarification, because now I'm going back on this. There's section 20 is talking about probation, and it says that probation officer can arrest the person without a warrant, and then the person could be held for a period of not more than 15 days or until the court issues a warrant authorizing that detention. Then there's no specific time period after which, or is there any specific time period? Okay, then there's section 21. I am kind of late. Section 20. Section 20, which is in chapter 137, and has to do with the probation of parole officer pulling them in for a violation, and then within 15 days a warrant has to be issued or they're released. Then you get to section 21, and we're in chapter 144. And there we're saying that corrections division can pull someone in if they have reason to believe that they violated, and here it's got parole and probation. But isn't that chapter supposed to just be, and it's changed to supervised release, but when, if we're going to take away the new terminology, are we going back in that chapter, should we just be referring to parole and probation is taken care of in 137?
Yes, I think so.
Be my recommendation. I think they got mixed together along the way.
Because this is parole.
I mean, not just in this bill, in existing law.
There are no references in the statute to the length of time it takes the court to conduct a probation, revocation, or show cause hearing.
Okay.
And you're right. You did. In this bill, it jumps into the parole revocation, moves to the 144 section, which is parole.
Well, we would accomplish that straightening out if we deleted probation in lines 11 and 14, wouldn't we?
Of section
21.
Uh-huh. I think that it's appropriate to do that.
Chairman, I'm not sure. That removes our authority then to arrest and detain probationers, which I don't think we want to do.
Well, what is your authority under section 20? Any probation officer or police officer or any other officer with the power of arrest having reasonable grounds to believe that the probationer has violated the conditions of probation may arrest a probationer without a warrant.
Mr. Chairman, there are two sections relating to probation, one that is performed by the state and one that is performed by perhaps county probation officers. In the last session, you separated those in a bill, and I think one of these refers to the...
That's maybe the problem. The other one is intended to be corrections division related only.
Okay. Yes, 144.
So you would not want to take probation out of 144.350.
Can I ask another question?
Go ahead.
Then the hearing, on page 17, we're talking about the arrest of a person for violation of parole or probation then. And then it says in line 20 that a hearing would follow as promptly as convenient to the parties, but within 15 days. whose hearing is that?
Parole board's hearing.
Parole board's.
That's correct.
For a probation person?
No, we only deal with parolees.
Wasn't a problem before you put the 15 days in, because it was, court could get to it when they were ready to, and the parole board could get to it whenever. Put the 15 days in, then it's, I'm not sure the court or the board can.
So that 15, well, that's what I'm trying to figure out.
Right.
Is that 15-day period for a hearing then applying both to parole board holding hearings on parole people and courts holding hearings? See, there's the court or issuing the warrant is 15 days. And then this would be another 15 days in which they hold the hearing on the actual issue.
That's right.
Okay. I never totally pieced those together. And then in section 25, where the parole board is issued an order to suspend the person's parole, then, well, is that section surplusage then to 144.350?
Well, if the legislature by policy wants all these hearings done within 15 days, then it's all right. If you don't want it, if you want longer for courts, then it is not.
No. I meant section 25 then says within 15 days after the issuance of an order.
If I might interrupt, Zuckerman, the hearing they're referring to in 350 is in fact the hearing described in 370. That's the parole revocation hearing.
The hearing there, are we repeating or are we saying 15 and then another 15?
As I interpreted what I read, it was that was the same hearing described in two different places in the statute, not two separate hearings.
But in 350 sub 2, it says a hearing shall follow, etc., to determine whether probable cause exists to continue detention pending a final determination of the case.
The implication has always been there, even in the existing statute, that someone other than the parole board was going to conduct that hearing. The board's only done the hearing that's required under 370 and described in 144.343. We have assumed we were meeting the requirements of 350 by conducting that hearing. Ours is a combined probable cause and disposition hearing, a so-called revocation hearing, where we put both issues together and make a final decision.
Would you state your name for the record, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Richard McKenna. I'm the hearings officer for the parole board.
Well, are you saying we have unnecessary duplication here or not?
Mr. Chairman, from my standpoint, you asked, does the 15 days throughout this section, which is the question you asked me, create any problems for corrections? It does not. What it does, it imposes 15 days on probationers, which I don't know if you want to do or not. That is in line 20 on page 17, where 15 days applies to parole, probation, conditional pardon, and other conditional release. That would put a 15-day time limit on all those, which was never in the statutes before. And if you want to do that, then that's a change for how we handle probationers. As far as applying to parole, I think that's consistent throughout. 15 days for parole is the discussion we've had all along.
Any further comments? Billy?
Wasn't the initial point to get at 15 days for probation?
As described in
that was not 15 days to the hearing on revocation. It was 15 days.
Again, I might clarify for the record, what the parole statute requires is that after the parole officer has made an arrest, the board has 15 days in which to act and issue its own suspension and detention order. There is no such requirement on the courts, and that's what apparently the division was trying to get to. So that the parole officer's detainer would not have life indefinitely.
Yeah.
Current statute has no limit. There is no, it doesn't speak to the 15 days duration of a probation detainee. He has no limit. Okay. We came in and said, let's limit it to 15 days.
Okay.
Now, then there was discussion about 15 days to a hearing. Now, that starts applying to probation, which we did not propose.
You mean courts and probation?
Right.
Okay, now I'm following you.
But I want to make sure that I understand, for the record, I'm Hazel Hayes, I want to understand the 15 days you have and 25 on 11, what was your intention there?
Page what?
On page 22, section 25, line 11.
Go to 144.350, as first said, that the corrections division, and I'm assuming that means parole and probation officers, can pull in a person that they think has violated parole.
I'm specifically raising the question. It starts with line 10 saying a hearing shall then be conducted as promptly as convenient, but within 15 days. And
right.
My
understanding was after they yanked somebody in thinking they violated parole, that then the parole board in section 25 would have 15 days to conduct the hearing on that violation.
Are you the revocation hearing?
That's what I thought the point was. What other hearing is there?
The probable cause hearing. Is that the hearing you understood that
yes,
they were going to be doing?
Parole revocation hearing. Full-blown revocation hearing. We've never really done probable cause hearings in Oregon. We have never done probable cause hearings. They've always been revocation hearings.
And aren't those hearings the ones
that corrections are
going
to be doing?
Going to assist the parole board and Mr. McKenna in conducting?
As I heard it here today, that yes, they will assist and they will do these hearings for us. However many we need to give to them to reach the 15-day limit, I hear them agreeing to do that.
That's what I thought had been worked out.
We'll work it out. We're in the process of working it out. With that direction, I don't think there'll be a problem.
The remaining question to that was then if I think I need to work a little further on trying to make sure how those sections are all fitting together. The reference in subsection 2 of section 21, which is anybody pulled in on parole or probation, and it says a hearing shall follow as promptly as convenient, but within 15 days to determine whether probable cause exists to continue detention pending a final determination. And he said they don't do that in parole cases. I guess they do. That would be one that the court would hold, maybe, to decide whether the person should continue to be held for probation violation, right?
Show cause hearing, yes.
Anyway, I am, if you want to state what the committee's intent is as far as the time frames for who to hold which hearings, if you want 15 days from when anybody's yanked in on probation or parole violation, then there's 15 days until they get released unless either the court decides to continue holding them. And then if the court did that, the court would have another 15 days to determine.
In effect, ultimate disposition.
Right.
Yes.
And in the
case. We want parallel outside restrictions on the parole revocation process.
Except that in the parole cases, the person's, pardon?
Go ahead.
The person might be pulled in by a parole officer, and then within 15 days, the parole board holds its one and only hearing. Yes?
The current situation is that the parole officer files a detainer on the basis of probable cause, sends a report to the parole board, which the board reviews, and after having reviewed, decides whether they're going to issue a suspension and detention order. What the statute says is that once that order has gone out, the board then has 15 days in which to do its hearing.
Do you have 15 days in which to do the order?
Yes. 15
and
days to do the order,
days
15
to
days to do the hearing. 30 days in effect from the arrest.
Okay.
Any further on parole and probation revocation procedure?
The only issue that we haven't touched upon is whether 15 days is the correct number. The ACLU objection being 15 days is too long for a warrantless hold, and the probation revocation